Welcome to Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. We're still talking about digital banking licenses that has just recently been announced as closure in terms of the date of application, which is on 30th June. So far, news reports have shown 29 applicants have submitted their requests to be given the license, of which what we understand is to be about 5 licenses at most is to be given out. So there's a lot of competition here, and we're trying to understand what makes one particular applicant have a little bit of an advantage over the other. One such applicant is Pertama Digital Berhad, because they have announced that they are one of the many applicants that has applied for a digital banking license to Bank Negara Malaysia. There's a lot to unpack here, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of us want to know more, not just about the applicants themselves, but perhaps the framework of how the digital banking universe is going to look like in this country, but more importantly, how they can be profitable in the 3 to 5 year time frame, because it's going to be a tough environment for everyone to operate in. Joining us for this evening is Saifi Akhtar, the Pertama Digital's Director of Strategy. Saifi, thanks for taking the time to speak with us.
Pleasure.
Now, there's a lot for us to unpack here, but let's go through with the company itself, Pertama Digital Berhad. You are listed on the main boards. Let's talk about what the company has been doing for the past few years and what the direction is going to be for the next few years to come.
Sure. So Pertama Digital Berhad started in the 80s as a fabric manufacturer, and it has been doing that for about 30 years. And about 2 years ago, due to declining business in the existing industry, there was a decision that was made to pivot to the digital side of things, so digital businesses. And so that was complete in about mid-2020. And one of the first investments made into a digital business was in Dapat Vista Sdn. Berhad, which is in the GovTech space and has been in that space since the year 2000. So moving forward, we are looking at, we're taking a very simple strategy, and that strategy is around identifying, simple problems or challenges that we can see in the day-to-day operations of our lives here in Malaysia, and then putting forward some really compelling solutions to solve those problems. And, these days, coincidentally, most of those problems are solved with digital tools. We are currently, I would say, experts in the space of government payments. And we have been doing we have an app called MyPay that allows people to pay for PTPTN loans and check on their loan status, for example, and make certain zakat and local council payments. And we also have a payment gateway that is currently the one of the world's first mobile-based court bail payment system, which has been doing very, very well.
You know, some of the best strategies are the simple ones. The problem is in the execution. And of course, you are among the people that would appreciate the problems or the intricacies of executing what needs to be done. Before we jump into what Pertama Digital's strategy is in terms of executing a digital bank, there's a lot of partnerships that you guys have been building, including Travo, the ride share company that has been on this show a few times, Paywatch, Koala, Butterfly FX. There's a lot of partnerships with Credit Bureau as well, Experian, quite a dominating scene because CTOS is also going for an IPO very soon, and some partnerships with Labuan Offshore. It's a lot of partnerships here, and this is without having a license. So I don't know how the company will look like with a license. What is the strategy going forward when it comes to building these kind of partnerships? Is it a long-lasting partnership that needs to be done? Is it a touch-and-go type of thing? Talk to us through all these kind of strategic partnerships that you guys are building with.
Sure. So if we just hark back to what I first said, which was about identifying problems, right? And, we can't approach the market or the situation with hubris and belief that we can do everything ourselves. So what we are doing is we're taking on a collaborative approach, and that means being the best technology company for all kinds of organizations to partner with. And what we are demonstrating and what we are really successful at doing is attracting not just public agencies, but we are attracting large PLCs. I mean, Experian is a company that's, you know, even bigger than Maybank. And we're also attracting the innovators. You've mentioned Trevo. PayWatch is a earned wage access company that's doing very, very well. And Butterfly Effects was actually run by a group of ex-BNM financial literacy professionals, right? And what we're doing is we're creating a platform for these companies to come forward to work together on solving problems that the Rugged Yard is facing. And you know, we speak the same language. That's exciting to see, right? We are starting to attract people because of the vision and the story that we are telling, you know. And maybe some of these partnerships may not lead to a big business, but I'm really, really excited specifically about what we're doing with Experian. We are planning to create an alternative credit score, a consent-based alternative credit score based on the information that we have already as a company, as well as what we're going to be getting from the digital bank license if we are successful. And just to demonstrate the kind of disruptive mindset we have, we are going to be making this alternative credit score available to everyone on the market. So all the digital banking applicants, the successful ones, all the incumbent banks, all the fintechs will all be able to use this, right? So what we are offering the market is a new way of looking at things and a new way of solving problems. It can't be done in silos.
Okay, let's get down to the weeds here. You guys have secured partnerships or investors from the Labuan Offshore Bank, Perfect Hexagon Commodity. You guys have struck a partnership with Al Sirat Sdn Bhd, an investment bank that is going to be one of your key investors moving forward. The initial capital, as required by Bank Negara, is 100 million. Still quite low compared to other capital requirements from other countries in this region. To put in contrast, for instance, Singapore requires 4.6 billion ringgit, Hong Kong about 161 million ringgit. So it's quite, you know, I wouldn't say easy to get by 100 million ringgit, but at the same time, it's quite low compared to other markets. So that's one part of that equation. The other part is, how do you intend to be profitable in the near to midterm strategy? And I know for a fact that Bank Negara's main concern would be one of this, which is, how do you turn into profit as quick as possible? So how much can you share with us when it comes to capital requirements and, of course, the strategy to turning into profit very quick, assuming you get the license?
Sure. So I'll share as much as I can. Let's first start with the 100 mil minimum capital requirements. And yes, you're right. It's amongst the lowest or the lowest in the region. And even when you reach full compliance in 3 to 5 years, it's still only 300 million, right? So it is very low. So that's a very nice low barrier of entry, which is going to attract a lot of innovators and smaller players, right? And that's nice to see. But interestingly, Bank Negara has also introduced other barriers that I see as a little bit more difficult to achieve. So, as you mentioned correctly, one is the requirement to demonstrate a clear path to profitability. Okay, and the second is to actually have a very clear indication and focus on how we're going to solve financial inclusion here in Malaysia. Right, so these are two things that Bank Negara really wants to see, and it's reflected in one of the first pages in the digital banking framework. Right, so so you know, the profitability piece is actually pretty simple. Right, so the only difference between a bank and you know, a technology company that has a combination of other licenses, your e-money license, your online money lending license, you know. There are other combinations of licenses that you could use to operate fintech offerings. But the only difference that a bank gives you is that it allows you to collect deposits, right? So that therein lies the secret, right? So if you are able to create a sustainable deposit engine, and that is deposits that's coming from you know, a sustainable source at a low cost, that is then allows you to drive or to create financing products that are fair and equitable, right? That is basically how a bank would be viable in the first 3 to 5 years, right? And that's exactly where Pertama Digital's strengths lie. So the way that we've created our consortium is a really simple, straight cut, right? So the deposit engine is brought by Pertama Digital. So we are really strong with our relationships with large organizations, be they public or private. And in a lot of the digitalization solutions that we bring to the table, it involves us collecting deposits or routing deposits to incumbent banks, right? So, you know, if you look at a recent report, I think it was in early June, the e-money license market was touted to be growing really well and fast. And it was said that in 5 years across all e-money licenses, the total deposits was 1.6 billion ringgit as of 2021. And, you know, Pertama Digital is going to surpass that by the time this bank goes live in late 2022. Right, and that's just from one organization. So that's what Pertama Digital's role is in the consortium. On the other side, we have Crowddoor. Crowddoor is a fast-growing fintech. They're based in Singapore, but they have operation here in Malaysia as well as in Indonesia. And Crowddoor has a secret sauce on how to lend viably to small businesses that have very thin credit profiles. Right. And so we have the input being deposits at low cost, and then we have the output being a dependable and repeatable credit model for small businesses. And in the middle, we then have InfoPro, which is a homegrown, very, very successful banking software company. And we went for them specifically because, unlike the more flashy, overseas options, InfoPro has are specialists at banking service in emerging markets. So if you look at their current customers, they're all across Southeast Asia, Africa, and the Middle East. And you know, let's face it, the kind of market that we're going through, we need to have that kind of expertise at the table.
Okay. You were opening the statement with a statement, you know, the two kind of restrictions that you feel is quite problematic that Benegara has imposed. Why do you feel that it's a questionable requirement by Bank Negara asking you guys what is the path to profitability? What's wrong with the regulator asking you that?
It's nothing wrong for me. So I love it, right? So our financial model delivers profitability well before what I would say Bank Negara expects. So we are clearly and comfortably going to be profitable within the first 3 years of operations, right? Okay. So I'm really happy with that.
The second item, when we talk about financial inclusion, what's up with that?
Okay, so that's the thing, right? So with financial inclusion, and again, I hope you didn't get me wrongly. I am a fan, and I'm happy that Bank Negara has put these focuses into the framework. And in fact, the financial inclusion piece was the one reason why my team and I said, look, this is something we want to do. Mm-hmm. Like I said, Pertama Digital exists to solve problems, right? And we know and we see on a day-to-day basis that, there are people who are financially excluded right here in the Klang Valley. We don't have to look far into a corner of Kelantan. And there's all kinds of data, that the researchers have done and it's made available that the current services that are provided by incumbent banks, by fintechs, are not sufficient in order to get this group of people, these demographics, into the formal financial system. And that problem is going to be amplified because of the pandemic. Okay. So the pandemic is making it difficult for people who aren't like you and I, you know, who can't just jump on the call and do business. You know, the whole digital banking application that we did at Pertama Digital, 99% remote, right? So the deal closed with Experian was remote. The deal closed with my consortium partners was remote. We didn't have to meet face to face, and we can put together, you know, a 500 million ringgit business, you know. And that's because we're privileged. But there are people who are standing on the corners of the streets who who are just clueless, right? How do we deal with MCOs? How do we deal with restriction on movement? How do we earn an income, right? So those are the kind of people that we're trying to focus on. And we are setting out ourselves not to just look at SMEs or MSMEs, because it tends to get a bit cold. Personally, I think we have to look at the humans who are powering these businesses, right? And we have to take a holistic approach into helping them make ends meet. And so we are positioning ourselves as a productive and ethical financing bank for B40 households. We are looking at households and not just businesses.
We'll go for one short break before we continue our conversation with Pertama Digital.
Thank you.
Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me the Director of Strategy for Pertama Digital, Saifi Akhtar. They are applying for a digital banking license from Bank Negara. Let's talk about the market itself, Saifi. It's not about financial inclusion, as in for Malaysia, at least. It's not about getting Malaysians a banking account. Data has shown that Malaysians have a large amount of Malaysians do have banking accounts. If you compare against, say, other markets in the region, so it's not just about getting them a banking account. It's trying to get them the cheapest financial product and facility available to them. And of course, this is just a tool. The issue here is on wealth creation. The issue here is on the ability for them to earn more, which is, quite frankly, a bigger job than both you and I. I mean, I can ask you guys all those questions and you can deliver the kind of products and services that you can get. But the issue is about wage. The issue is about the economy. And now with the economy slowed down near a halt, not just in Klang Valley, around the country also is facing the same thing. And while other countries are getting ready to recover, Malaysia is well far from that point of recovery just yet. These are macroeconomic issues, and of course, you are trying to enter a space where everything revolves around the macro trends and the mega trends that is impacting the country and the region. How do you fit your business into the global climate right now? Do you feel that you have a greater important part to play, or this is just a small solution that you're offering to the market? The bigger issue here is middle income trap, wage, those kind of stuff. What's your view on these mega trends?
Okay, so let's take a step back and look at what typically happens after pandemics, right? So if we look back to the 14th century when we had the Black Plague, yes, a third of Europe died, okay? And what happens is then you had businesses that were lacking the labor or access to affordable labor. And what happens next is you have two things that happen. You have the printing press being created, so there's innovation because they wanted automation around things that people used to do with their hands before the pandemic, and secondly, the young men started to look at adventuring overseas or going for sea voyage as something that was less risky than staying at home and dying from a pandemic. That was what happened in the 14th century. And what happens next is, of course, America is founded, right? And then, you have the Spanish flu in the 1920s. What happened after the Spanish flu was that...
That word is triggering a lot of memories.
But I got it right.
You got it right.
Yeah,
not somebody else. Okay. Sorry. Go on.
No problem. So what happens next is you see an increase or a quick acceleration of manufacturing, like in for automobiles and so on. So I believe that post-pandemic, we are going to see a boom in innovation. And our goal is to include everyone. So that's the inclusive bit. Because you and I, if we were out on the street tomorrow without a job, there's so much that we can do in order to earn an income, right? We have so many opportunities. We could do a million and one things. We could just go online, learn something, and start selling a service, something that we just learned 2 weeks ago. We could do it. But there's a whole group of people who can't. So this post-pandemic productivity growth or this tsunami of a wave that's going to come in the next 1 or 2 years, we have to bring the rest of these financially excluded people onto that wave. So I see that as a huge opportunity. It is not just one that is unique to Malaysia. We are going to be taking this to other emerging markets, and I am confident that this could be a Malaysian branded model of financially inclusive digital financial services. If we start looking
yes,
at...
I understand what you're trying to say. Now I'm going to get you in a little bit more of a hot soup or hot water here. Do you feel that 5 licenses is too much? Do you feel that state actors coming into the picture, like the state of Sarawak, state of Johor, are applying just like you guys, are conflicting blending public interests or government interests with corporate interests? What's your view on the size of licenses coming out? Or is it too little? What do you think about all this?
I think there's space for more. I think that we could do with 7 to 10 licenses, but that's my own personal opinion.
Of course, yeah.
And because the thing is this, the 3 billion ringgit asset cap is not that big, right? It's a small, little, tiny chip on the whole total asset size here in Malaysia. And that gives, a bit of flexibility for this bank to perform a certain way, right? And for us to each of the applicants to try a different strategy in solving these big issues. I'm not going to comment on the state governments. I'm not going to comment on the other applicants. I would say that I think we are in really good company. I'm really proud that Pratama Digital has these sort of consortiums that are going for this license with us. But I will say this: there are individuals, or not individuals, there are organizations that are applying for the license that are already in a position to solve these problems. Okay, they're already in the position to do it. Right? I would like to see how a banking license, and specifically ability to collect deposits, because that's all a banking license does, right? How does this change, this organization's ability to deliver ethical and productive and financially inclusive products to the people who need it, the most vulnerable here in Malaysia? That is what I would like to understand. And of course, we'll see, when Bank Negara makes their decisions.
Yeah. You stole the thunder out of my speech right now, because when do you think the announcement is going to be made? Has it been publicly made announced in terms of when they're going to announce it?
I believe it's due in the first quarter of 2022. Okay. I'm hoping to be engaging with Bank Negara earlier than that, but I don't have any information around that. And, we're just sitting tight. In the meantime, we are already starting. We are hitting the ground running, working with the partners that you mentioned earlier in the interview, because what we do doesn't depend on whether we get a license or not, right? It can start now,
So this license is what? Merely to deposit, to take deposits, basically, because the rest, the services part, you can actually roll out right now. Am I right?
Exactly. The services parts can be rolled up in partnership with fintechs, with incumbent banks, and we're already working with cooperatives. We have close relationships with a couple of the Islamic banks here in Malaysia as well. And we are advising some of them on their digitalization strategies. So, look, we are Pratama Digital is entering the market with a laser focus on solving these problems and putting the ringgit right in the middle, right? So whatever it takes, in order to solve the problems for them, and if we can make a bit of money on the side, we're going to do it. It doesn't have to be all us, Yeah. And another thing that another strength that I think we bring to the table is, look, if you want to have the customer's interests front and center, you have to be agnostic. You can't be an e-commerce platform, because perhaps this e-commerce platform is good for certain products, and another one, maybe a local one like Muda, perhaps is better for something else, right? Mm-hmm. And how are you going to promote to your customer that, no, you should go on Muda instead, because Muda has better listings or more customers going through. But you have to be agnostic, right? So we can tell our customers that, look, you need to earn this much income in order to meet the needs of your household. And based on the demographics, based on your profile, on your household profile, on your capabilities and so on, we would recommend that you do 9 to 5 on ride sharing, and then perhaps 5 to 7 doing food delivery on another platform, not the same one, and then perhaps your spouse could be selling on Instagram something, you know, or it could be giving online lessons, say, you know, like Quran lessons and so on, and teaching you how to monetize that. That's what we want to do, right? We want, unlike banks, what we're doing is we're not looking for the ideal customers, you know. We are trying to create them, you know. We have to create the customers. We can't just look for them.
So here comes the compulsory question. How confident are you in being granted the license to operate a digital bank in Malaysia?
Okay, so based on the framework that the Bank Negara has had, that published late last year, we are focusing on a few key parts, and we have, so in terms of compliance, we have I would say probably one of the best like capital adequacy ratios in the market, far above what incumbent banks are providing. We have a direct route to profitability. You know, we have the relationships that are the collaborative relationships that are coming together to start to solve this issue. So I'm really confident that we have met all the requirements of the framework and exceeded them, in fact. And so based on that, we are very confident.
See, this is why I don't want to ask that question. Everybody's confident. 29 applicants are very confident, and I'm not confident at all with you guys, because not because of the capability or capacity that you guys can deliver. I'm sure that you guys can do the best. But it's just so tight, you know, 29 and 5, up to 5. It could be less than that. So it's a bit tough. So I really wish you all the best. Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot more conversation like this that can be brought forward. But thanks for sharing and having a frank conversation with this on my show. Thank you very much. That was Saifi Akhtar, Pertama Digital's Director of Strategy. They are applying for a digital banking license, and as per Saifi's statement just now, and some of the reports that we've been reading, some announcements will be made very much later, down 3 quarters from now, perhaps. But we shall keep a good eye, a close eye on this moving forward. If you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to astroawani.com, look for Notepad, look for Pertama Digital, look for Digital Bank. There's a lot of resources for you to learn from there. You can also watch these kind of shows on your mobile devices. Just download the Astro Awani app, wherever you get the application. Saifi, thanks again very much for joining the show.
Thank you, Ibrahim. Such a pleasure.